And we are on air. This is Monday night, June the 5th, for our WWT Raceway NASCAR Race Review and Hot Topic Sound Off on Fan for Racing Radio. Joining me shortly will be our co-host, Seth Sagala. So I will do our rundown while we're waiting for him to come on board. In our first half hour, we're going to start with the latest short track news. Then we'll review the ARCA West Series race at Portland International Raceway. We'll include a brief ARCA Menards Series and ARCA East Series update. In our next half hour, we're going to review the Truck Series race at WWT Raceway and then the NASCAR Xfinity Series race at Portland International Raceway. And in our third half hour, we do have a guest. Dylan Zampa will be on board. He's the driver of the number 29 for Spears SRL Southwest Touring Series, and he will join our conversation. Then, afterward, we will review the NASCAR Cup Series race at WWT Raceway. We end this episode, of course, with our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off conversation with the Fan for Racing crew. So, again, Sal is just getting home from work when the show is getting started, so we'll give him a couple minutes here to kind of get settled in before he calls in. And we'll look forward to talking to him when he arrives. So let me go ahead and get started with some short track news. I'm going to start over at Racing America. This came out today. Andy Lally will be racing with Rick Ware Racing for the Sonoma and for the at Sonoma and for the remaining road courses. So he'll be driving the number 15 entry for this weekend's NASCAR Cup Series at Sonoma. So that's going to be fun to see Andy Lally back behind the wheel of a NASCAR Cup Series vehicle. So watch for him this weekend. Also, MPM Marketing announces the signing of Tucker Anderson from Dirt Cars. Anderson from Blairsville, Georgia, is a regular competitor in 604 and 602 dirt late model events. So that's a big deal for Tucker Anderson, and he's a 16-year-old dirt late model racer, and I'm sure that he's happy about that news. Also, fans will be able to watch the ASA Stars at Hickory on Monday night on MAV TV. That's tonight over on MAV TV. That race starts at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, same time as our show, the Tar Heel 250. Okay, let me bring Sal into the queue here. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Hello.
Hi, Sal.
Oh, you can hear me? I'm trying out a new set of headbutts because my other ones, I lost them.
Oh, no. Okay, yes, I can hear you. I was just going over some of the late model news or the short track news and dirt racing news over at Racing America, but now I'm going to head over to Flow Racing now and look at the news over there and get good things that are going on there. There's a list here of the top 10 active dirt late model drivers at Eldora Speedway. They have a race that's coming up, and so they're going to tell you who to watch, I guess, ranking the 10 active dirt late models at Eldora Speedway prior to the 2023 Dirt Late Model Dream. If you want to know who to watch for out there when they're racing at Eldora, that's a good article to check out. Anything you see over at Flow Racing?
All I can say is that Jacob Denny wins Indiana Midget Week opener at Tri-State Speedway. That's all
Jacob
one I
Denny?
Can see. And then Jacob Denny, yeah.
Okay. And then also Jake Swanson used a last lap pass for USAC Sprint's win at Knoxville Raceway. All of these articles, by the way, are over at Flow Racing.
Okay, then one of the races that won't be on, that was, it actually wasn't televised, and it also wasn't, you won't see any news on it, is the Wenatchee 200, which is the first time they've had a super late model race at Wenatchee Speedway up in Washington, and it ran this Saturday, and they didn't get any coverage on it. I talked to Jeremy Anders. I was up at the race. But anyways, Cole Raz ended up with the win. He beat out Derek Thorne was in this race also, so he beat out Derek Thorne.
Wow.
Derek ended up finishing second. Yeah, Derek finished second. Cole Raz won the race. Cole Raz, as most of you know, is Grayson Raz's younger brother, who used to run the Can-Am West Series with Jefferson Pitts Racing. His teammate used to be Noah Gregson. So that was a really good race. Too bad it wasn't televised. Too bad there wasn't any coverage on it. But next year, they're going to get coverage for it. And they had a really good crowd out there, really good racing, really exciting. So congrats to Cole Raz and, Jeff Jefferson Motorsports.
Very good. Also, a name that might be familiar to some NASCAR fans, Rico Abreu earns a big All-Star Sprints win at Plymouth Dirt Track this past weekend. So a big congratulations to him as well.
Yeah, then who else do we have here?
Connor Hall.
Connor Hall wins the Cars Tour 125 at Langley Speedway in a family-built car. So I'm sure that was an exciting win, especially he held off Caden Honeycutt on the last 20 laps. He took the lead with less than 20 laps to go from Caden Honeycutt and held off Queen to score his first tour victory of the Brendan Queen. Held off Brendan Queen to get his first win in the 2023 Cars Tour Series.
Well, here's a NHRA news as well. Sal, the Flow Racing favorite, Anton Brown, collects his 50th number one qualifier at NHRA Epling. So it's his first number one qualifier award in nearly 6 years, and he took it this Saturday at the New England Nationals to score the 50th pole of his career.
Yeah, and actually that race won't be run until this weekend. It got rained out. They only got to do some of the qualifying, and that was it. So basically all of Saturday and all of Sunday, the finals got rained out. So they only ran two rounds of Top Fuel this past weekend. So they'll finish running it. They'll finish it up this next weekend at their next stop. So, So then that'll happen on Friday, Saturday, or actually Saturday and Sunday.
Okay, great. Thanks for that update. Now we're going to go ahead and move over to Short Track Scene and hit some of the headlines over there. I see one here. Cup spotter Derek Nealon begins the 2023 season driving slate at Berlin. So we're going to see a spotter behind the wheel.
Yeah, actually, he just finished up his car. He was looking for sponsorship the last, I think it's been the last 3-4 weeks. He's been looking for sponsorship, but he just barely finished up the car. He finished up late. He wanted to start at the beginning of the season. He was supposed to start at Five Flags the first race of the season, but couldn't get the car done in time. So, but now he's all good and ready to go.
Well, I'm excited for him. Also, what are some of the other ones that you see?
Rosario beat William Byron in the ASA Hickory Slugfest. I watched that one. Talked to William Byron's tire guy too, and that was not a very. William Byron was not happy with the way he was raced by Gio. Another controversial finish. And anyways, Congrats to Gio on the win. And so Will Byron, you know, you can't get them all, but this is the second one of the, I think the second race that Gio has ran Byron this hard, and so there's no there's a lot of bad blood between these two.
Okay, well, we have to kind of watch that story as it continues to unfold.
As it develops.
Now, also, we've been talking about this race, Sal, the SRL race, the national SRL race at Berlin, is the Money in the Bank race is going to be coming up here as well, June 6th and 7th. That's tomorrow and Saturday.
Yeah, that's going to be a really good race. They got a lot of good entries in there, they picked this race up from the ASA. This was supposed to be an ASA race, and SRL National stepped in and kind of took the race from the ASA. So,
Nealon's going to be racing along with Eric Jones, but so is Carson Hocevar. He's going to be in that race as well.
Yeah. This is one of the big ones. It's run during the week. You'll have Bubba Pollard will be there, Derek Griffith, Jet Nolan, Gio Ruggiero will be back.
And, Sean Hingorani.
Sean Hingorani's going to be there. Like you said, Carson Hocevar. Mike Garvey, who's an old school driver from back there. He's also got his entry in. Yeah, Sean Hingorani will be running a car for I think he's running the car that usually Chandler Smith would normally run for Donnie Wilson Motorsports. So that would be the car that Sean Hingorani's in.
Another driver that we know from the ARCA Menards series is Derek Griffith. There's an article here about him loving Berlin Raceway, and he expects to have speed for that race. So there's another driver that's going to be in this race.
Oh yeah, he'll definitely be in it. He's big on the East Coast as far as all the big the big money racers. And then let's see, Benjamin goes back to back with the GSPSS Riverside win. Travis Benjamin says it took Travis Benjamin 6 starts over 7 seasons to win his first race in the Granite State Pro Stock Series. So
very good. Congratulations to Travis.
Yes, that's a big win for Travis right there.
It is indeed. Okay, I think we'll do one more, and that is Carter Langley and Aaron Donnelly split the South Boston Twins for late model stock cars. The leaders crashed along the line, and no one was mad, so that's pretty good.
That's a first.
That's a first, huh? So the lengthy string of 9 wins that Carter Langley and 6-time South Boston Speedway champion Peyton Sellers of Danville, Virginia, had achieved between themselves at South Boston was broken in Saturday night's Bojangles night race event, but not before Langley had extended the string one more time. So very good to have 2 different winners there for the Twins at South Boston. All right, we're going to move on, Sal, over to the ARCA Racing website and talk now about the race that took place this past weekend that Landon Lewis won. You and I were both talking about this earlier. It was a battle between Landon Lewis and Cole Custer. Landon Lewis, by the way, has won of the 4 races this season, he's had 2nd place 3 times. So to get first in this 4th race was a really big deal for Landon Lewis.
Oh yeah, it was a big deal. He's been knocking on the door, and actually he had a win last year in the ARCA Menards Series. He had a win at at Kern County Raceway is where he picked up his very first ARCA Menards Series West win.
Okay. So that's pretty cool. And he had to beat a really good driver in the NASCAR Xfinity Series regular, Cole Custer. It was exciting to watch those two drivers battle for the lead in those closing laps.
Yeah, it was. And, man, a huge congratulations to William Solich, who didn't have a hood from a wreck early in the race. And he still had the speed enough to come back and still get a solid fourth-place finish.
Yeah. Custer finished in second. He was followed by Dale Quarterly. Then it was William Sawalich, Parker Retzlaff, rounding out the top five. And then the next five drivers were Bradley Erickson, Caleb Schrader, Takuma Koga, David Magras and Eric Johnson Jr. So, your thoughts about the top 10 there, Sal?
Yeah, it was a pretty crazy race. I watched it. I watched Dale Quarterly. Actually, he finished third. Congrats on that, because he picked up a penalty when he went through the. He shot out through the. What the heck do they call that turn right there? Anyways, when you go through, if you don't make the turn, you're supposed to stop and then go. And he didn't make the stop. He just went right through it.
Yeah,
and
he had to send back to the back.
He had to go into the pit and do a stop and go pit penalty. So he came out and finally the time that he made up. And but yeah, the top 10, you see a lot of names up there. Takuma Koga, congratulations on an eighth place finish. Caleb Schrader, who was driving a car for Bill McAnally Racing, a rookie,
mm-hmm.
finished seventh. And of course, him and Landon Lewis being the highest finishing rookie who won the race. So it was for those of you that haven't watched it, I don't know when they're replaying it, but you got to watch it. It was a really good race. A lot of wrecks,
that's,
a lot of action.
Right here.
Yeah, a lot of different. A lot of different things going on.
Absolutely, it's a great race to watch. If you have not seen it, I would highly recommend the replay of the Portland 112 at Portland International Raceway, and it can be seen on June the 11th. That's this Sunday on CNBC at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. If you can't watch it at that time, make sure you set up the DVR to record it, because it was an exciting race with all kinds of things happening throughout the event. Let's go over the point standings for the ARCA West, Sal.
Okay, the point standings for the ARCA West is we still see Landon Lewis leading the points. Sid is second, is Sean Hingorani. Third is actually tied for second, is Sean Hingorani and Tyler Reif.
Yeah.
And then you go to fourth is Bradley Erickson, who's only a point behind, and then in fifth is Trevor Huddleston, who also had a good run at Portland. And then sixth is Tanner Reif. Seventh is Kyle Keller. Eighth is Takuma Koga. Ninth is Todd Sousa. And tenth is David Smith. So that rounds out your top 10.
Yeah, it's a really tight battle, though, I think, still. And there's quite a few ties in that group. There's a tie between Todd Sousa and David Smith for that ninth spot. There's also a tie between Kai Keller and Takuma Koga for the seventh spot. And between 10th and 1st, after four races, is just 56 points. So, and then you mentioned the tie for the second position between Sean Hingorani and Tyler Reif. Tyler Reif. It's really amazing. Sean Hingorani has the best average start, but Landon Lewis has the best average finish because he's got that 1.8 with 3 seconds and a first-place finish in four races. So he definitely deserves to be in that number one spot, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah, he does. It's going to be a battle this year for the as far as the points go. Because now they have to have another road course coming up this weekend in Sonoma, so they're going straight for one road course, straight into another. Usually they'll take a 2 or 3 week absence.
Yep,
but
they're going to be
this time they're going straight from Portland straight to Sonoma into another road course.
Exactly, and I want to just mention here on a programming note, we tried to get Landon Lewis for tonight's program. However, it did not work out, so we do have him scheduled to be on our podcast that we're putting together on Thursday for our preview show of Sonoma. So we'll be able to talk to Landon not only about his win this weekend at Portland, but we can talk to him as a preview for the race coming up at Sonoma as well. So I'm really looking forward to chatting with him. And I know, Sal, you were really looking forward to talking to him. So we're going to see if we can't get him back for the Monday show sometime as well.
Okay, yeah, sounds really good. I'm sure we can work something out with him and get him. You know, get him back, you know, since we get him on and.
Yeah, especially if he wins again at Sonoma, Sal, that would be the perfect time to bring him back.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll have to keep an eye on that. We'll have to keep an eye on it, but stay tuned for our interview with Landon Lewis this Thursday as well. Okay, we do have some other races that are coming up in the ARCA Menards series, and Jay and I, see, I do it the other way too, Sal. Jay and I will be doing that preview of the General Tire 200 at Sonoma Raceway for the ARCA West series this Thursday. That race will take place on June 9th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It's, again, the General Tire 200. And it will be available via Flow Racing for live streaming. So if you're not a member there, you want to make sure you get signed up for that. Also, the ARCA East, well, let's go to the ARCA Menards series, because the ARCA Menards series, we were just talking about Berlin Speedway for the SRL National. It's not the same weekend, but the next weekend after that, the ARCA Menards series will be racing the Berlin ARCA 200 on June 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern at Berlin Raceway. And that race will be televised on Fox Sports 1, which is kind of exciting to have that on the big stage for the ARCA Menards series. And then the last one that I want to mention here is the Calypso 150 for the ARCA Menards Series East. We're going to have to wait for this one, Sal. It's not going to be until July the 15th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time out at Iowa Speedway. And again, that race will be televised on Fox Sports 1. So a lot of fun racing coming up here in all three series of the ARCA Menards Series.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of excitement coming up. So just as a fan, just get ready and sit back and enjoy the show.
Okay, and just so you know, tickets are still available for that General 200 at Sonoma Raceway this weekend. There is a link. If you go to arcaracing.com, they have a link for where you can get the Friday night tickets, or you can get a weekend pass. And there's also a telephone number that you can call to get your tickets. So they give you the office hours and everything over there at arcaracing.com, and it links you actually with Sonoma Raceway for that information. So really good time to get tickets and get out there to the racetrack. Let's see, a couple of, they talked about the five Xfinity Series drivers that raced out at Portland. Cole Custer was one of those drivers. He came up short of the victory, but he came awful close.
Yes, he did. It was a close one.
It definitely was. Tom?
No, try to fix these score buds there. One or two score wants to keep going off. One wants to stay on, and the other one is playing music, so I have to keep pushing the button so it'll go back to the phone.
Oh, okay. another article that's up there, you know, we talk about Takuma Koga all the time. He comes from Japan for the racing that he does in the Arkham and Art series and in the Arkham West series specifically. And there's a great article over at ArkaRacing.com talking about his love for racing that keeps bringing him back to that West series. But I always love to see Takuma Koga in the top 10 because of all the to be in these races now.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, he has over 100 starts in the Arkham West series, too. Amazing.
And
him and Tatsusa are the only two that have that many starts.
It's amazing. But I highly recommend everybody read that article because it really shares some great information about Takuma Koga. And then there's also NASCAR 75 ARCA roots prevalent in many of the new additions to the greatest drivers lists during NASCAR's 75th year anniversary, where they've added 25 new drivers to the 50 best drivers in NASCAR. But a lot of those drivers started in the ARCA Menard series.
Yes. Oh, yeah, they did. A lot of them did. That's where they get their start from. And then from here, then they move up into the truck series and then to the from the truck series then into the Xfinity and then to Cup.
Yes, indeed. It's always a lot of fun to kind of see the link between the ARCA Menards series and NASCAR. And then also Manan Raman and how he's rose to prominence in Venturini Motorsports. Venturini this year is really making a lot of history by racing for the championship in both the ARCA East, the ARCA West, and the ARCA Menards series. They're racing all three of the series this year. And he serves, he's an engineer at Venturini Motorsports, but he also serves as a crew chief on occasion. He's a Bengali American whose journey in motorsports is just getting started. So another really great article from ArcaRacing.com. And did you know, Sal, that it was Sean Hingorani when he dove low at Portland International Raceway this weekend? He earned the Ricci sweep move of the race.
Yeah, I read something about that in the ARCA News that he did get the sweep move of the race. You know what they do? They let the fans vote on it.
Yes, I think that
So basically, yeah. So basically, it's a fan vote on the as far as the sweep move of the race.
Yeah. And so that's what the fans voted for, and you know what? I trust their voting tally down that. Okay, Sal, we're at the top of the hour, so it's time for us to move over to the Craftsman Truck Series and the review of their race at Worldwide Technology Raceway, the Toyota 200. Grant Infinger came up with that victory at the age of 38 years, and he drives the number 23 Champion Power Equipment Chevrolet for GMS Racing. His crew chief is Jeff Hensley. It was his ninth victory in the 162 Craftsman Truck Series races, his second victory and seventh top 10 finish this season. It's also his first victory and fourth top 10 finish in seven races at WWT Raceway. Christian Eckes finished second, posting his second top 10 finish in six races at WWT Raceway, and it's his sixth top 10 finish this year. Stuart Friesen had a nice finish, finishing third. It was his fifth top 10 finish in six races at WWT Raceway. And I'm so impressed with Nick Sanchez from Rev Racing. He finished eighth and was the highest finishing rookie of this race. Very exciting for the season that he is having with Rev Racing in their season this year in the Craftsman Truck Series. So taking advantage of Ty Majeski and James Zane Smith's wreck at the front of the field, Grant Enfinger grabbed his second Craftsman Truck Series victory of the season at WWT Raceway. It was during a two-lap overtime that took the race two laps past its scheduled distance of 160 laps. Enfinger, of course, held off Christian Eckes to claim his first win at the track and the ninth of his career. Let's see. He also took home that additional $50,000 for winning the second race of the Triple Truck Challenge. Enfinger was in the right position to inherit the lead on lap 156 of the extended 162-lap race. That's when Zane Smith and the pole sitter Ty Majeski wrecked while battling for that top spot. Enfinger was in third place and was challenging all day, having won stage one and leading a race high 65 laps. Again, Christian Eckes was second, Stuart Friesen third, and Stuart also won stage two. Then it was Carson Hocevar, Chase Purdy, Matt DiBenedetto, Ben Rhodes, Nick Sanchez, were all fourth through eight. Jesse Love in his series debut, filling in for Corey Heim, who was not feeling well, ended up finishing in ninth place, and Jake Garcia closed out the top 10. There were 11 lead changes among four drivers, 11 cautions for 61 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race, 116.898 miles per hour. Your thoughts, Sal, about that top 10 finish?
Yeah, it was. I missed the race because I was getting ready for. What happened? Oh no, we were flying out to Washington, so I missed the race. But yeah, that top 10 was. I mean, Jake Garcia finally broke the top 10. It was neat to see him. You know, as a rookie, you know, we've been talking about him. You know, being Christian Eckes's teammate over Bill McAnally Racing, and Christian is, gosh, he's on his way to, man, he's really making a name for himself in the truck series, you know, after he's picked up a couple of wins, and, you know, now, you know, he's running up front. Seems like the team is finally clicking on all eight cylinders.
It does. It really does. And Jesse Love, what about Jesse Love finishing ninth in his first truck series race?
Yeah, I think that's the other one, too.
Mm-hmm. So the average, the margin of victory for this race was 0.256 of a thousandth of a second. So that was pretty amazing as well. There were 22 cars that finished all 162 laps of this race. And then you go down to 31 cars. Finished the race, well, 30 cars finished the race. There were some cars that had a little bit of incidents. Of course, Ty Majeski was caught up in that accident. He was out on lap 155. Haley Deegan had an accident that took her out of the race on lap 86. Connor Jones' accident took him out on lap 66. And Clay Greenfield, poor guy, didn't even make it through the first lap, and he was out of the race. Dean Thompson had engine issues that took him out of the race on lap 20. Your thoughts about those situations? Are you still with me, Sal? No, Sal had to call back in. Sal, you're back in.
Yeah, no, I tried to tell you, my phone kicked me out. My earbuds kicked me out. One fell out of my ear, and I don't know, these are weird. The other ones don't hang on. I can talk with one. These ones, one falls out and it hangs up. So, yeah, I'm back.
Okay, well, I was asking about your thoughts about the ones that had accidents or whatever that took them out of the race.
Yeah, you know, it is what it is. I mean, it's racing. You know, you got to expect it.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's a tough pill to swallow, but you know what? You're going to get it, you know. It's like they say, you got to take the good with the bad, you know. Tyler Jeske, I know he's been running real well in the series, you know. So, you know, and even the drivers will tell you, you know what, you know, you'll have your ups and your downs, you know what, and they all want to get all these gremlins out, you know, at the end of the season, you know, and have still be in the chase, you know, that's when, you know, like they say, you really want to peak. You know, is in the first you want to win that one race to get you in, you know, and then after that, you know, then it's, you know, trying to stay in. And, but, you know, it's tough. You know, I think, I'm not sure. When we check the points, I'll see. I think Ty might already have a win.
He does have a win. They've got 12 races in on this season. And there's a couple drivers here that only have 11 starts, one because of their age and one because they weren't feeling well this weekend. You want to go over the points?
Yeah, we'll go over the points right now. So leading the points is still Corey Heim.
Yep.
One point behind Corey. Ty Majeski doesn't have any wins this season so far. Corey Heim has a win. Grant Infinger has two wins.
Oh, you're right.
Smith
I've looked at the wrong column there. I'm sorry.
Ty doesn't have a win yet. But he's 1 point behind Corey Heim in the points. And then you got Grant Infinger. The fourth is Zane Smith. Fifth is Ben Rhodes with one win. And then you go down to sixth is Christian Eckes, who has two wins. Seventh is Carson Hocevar, who has one win. Eighth is Matt Crafter with zero wins. Ninth is Stuart Friesen with zero wins. And the top 10, and in the 10th spot is Matt Benedetto. And right behind him in the 11th spot, outside of the bubble, is Tanner Gray. That's only 7 points behind the bubble spot of Matt Benedetto.
Yep, and then Nick Sanchez, Chase Purdy, Jake Garcia, Tyler Ankrum take us down to the top 15 drivers. But it's amazing. Three drivers have two wins with Grant Infinger, Zane Smith, and Christian Eckes. And then four drivers, or is it another? It's three drivers. Three drivers have that one win with Corey Heim, Ben Rhodes, and Carson Hocevar. All the rest of that top 10 have the zero wins. The one with the most playoff points, though, Sal, Christian Eckes with 14, and he's in sixth place, but he's got the most stage wins with those two wins, giving him the most playoff points.
Yeah, you know, with he's racing for Bill McAnally Racing this year. Boy, he sure has really helped that team and brought him up in a prominent, legit contender.
Yeah, him and Corey Heim are the only drivers that have four stage wins. And keep in mind, Corey Heim did not race this weekend. So he didn't even race this weekend, and he's still at the top of the points standings. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It sure is. It's a you know to be able to hold on to that spot like that, and you know, because you know you look at the top 10 that who are going to take it to the chase. Mm-hmm. There's only five drivers that don't have a win. So already half of the field that's in already has a win.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So there's 5 open spots for people to get in on points. And it's going to be a battle. They have, maybe 4 more races left this season. And their regular season is going to be open, and they're going to start their playoffs. So the clock is ticking here in the Truck Series for sure.
Oh, yeah, yes, it is. And I'm sure the drivers in 11th on down are starting. They're going to start to feel it pretty soon.
Yes, they are. So I expect that the racing is going to be very, very very tight for these guys as they wind down their season. Let me go over what's left here. They're going to race at Nashville Super Speedway on June 23rd. Then they've got Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course on July the 8th, Pocono Raceway July 22nd, and then their season finale is Richmond Raceway on July 29th. August is when they start their playoff round of 10, and that's on August 11th at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. So only 4 more races for them to get into the playoffs here in the Craftsman Truck Series.
Well, this season sure has gone by quick. It's gone by quick and it's gone by slow because we had some weeks where nobody raced, and they shut down the terminals, and also they opened them. You know,
I'm sorry, I didn't catch what you said there, Sal. Sal, are you still there? Oh, Sal has to call back in again. He must have gotten dropped again. I didn't quite catch what he said at the end there. But he'll call back in. And we'll catch up with what he said there. While he's doing that, I'm going to go ahead and pull up my notes here for the Xfinity Series race. Now, they raced out at Portland International Raceway. So it was a little bit of back and forth there between WWT Raceway and Portland International Raceway this weekend. Okay, Sal is back. So, Sal, we didn't quite catch what you said there at the end.
You know what? Go ahead and keep going. I'm going to hang up. I'm going to have to go get Sandy's earbuds to put them in because these ones aren't working. I got to go find them before our guest comes on.
Oh, okay.
So
I'll go ahead and get started with the Xfinity series then.
Okay, yeah, go ahead. And then as soon as I find the others, I'll call you right back.
Okay, thanks, Sal.
Okay.
Okay, Sal's going to take care of that. And while he's busy getting his earbuds in place, we're going to go ahead and get started with our review of the Xfinity Series race out at Portland International Speedway. The Pacific Office Automation 147 was won by Cole Custer. He finished second in the ARCA West race and first in the Xfinity Series race at the age of 25, driving the number 00 Haas Automation Ford for Stuart Haas Racing. His crew chief, Jonathan Toney. It was his 11th victory in 123 Xfinity Series starts and his first victory in 8th top 10 finish this year. Also his first victory and first top 10 finish in one race at Portland International Raceway. Then it was Justin Allgaier who finished second. He posted his second top 10 finish in 2 races at Portland and his 9th top 10 finish this year. Sam Mayer finished third, posting his first top 10 finish in 2 races at Portland. And Chandler Smith, who finished 9th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Now we're going to do the kind of a review of the actual race that took place this weekend with Cole Custer. It was a thriller, and what happened is Cole Custer took advantage of a melee in turn one after an overtime restart. He held off a charging Justin Allgaier to win Saturday's Pacific Office Automation 147 at Portland. Parker Kligerman pushed Justin Allgaier and Sheldon Creed wide, allowing the number 0-0 of Cole Custer to get by for the lead. Custer went on to lead the final two laps and won the Xfinity Series season race at Portland. It was his first win of the season, and Junior Motorsports actually took the next three spots in the rundown, with Allgaier finishing in second place. Sam Mayer took third, and Josh Berry rebounded from a mid-race spin to finish fourth. Then it was Austin Hill who rounded out the top five. The next five drivers were Myatt Snyder, finishing sixth in his first start since Daytona. The pole sitter, Sheldon Creed, who led a race-high 47 laps, finished in seventh, followed by the number 24 of Connor Mosack, the number 16 of Chandler Smith, and the number 20 of John Hunter Nemechek. Creed actually won the opening stage, while Custer picked up his third stage win of the season in the second stage. There were five lead changes among four drivers and five cautions for 10 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 65.126 miles per hour. Let me check here. Sal is back. So let's see what he has to say about our top 10 finishers out at Portland International Raceway.
Okay, here we go. I finally got something to work. Can't believe modern technology messed me up the way it did. Okay, so let me go back. So I didn't watch the race because I was over at Wenatchee, but I'm looking at the top 10, and and I was busy to you as you were speaking. So it looked like Chandler Smith is the highest finishing rookie. Was there an issue with Chandler during the race or after the race?
Yeah, Chandler Smith and Jeb Burton had a they had a little tuft after the race. Jeb Burton wasn't happy with the way Chandler Smith raced him, and he let him know about it at the end of the race. So
I heard something about that, and I heard from other drivers, you know, that Chandler needs to learn how to race, and I think they brought him too quick. But either way, congrats on Cole Custer finally getting the win.
Let me go back to that, Sal. Let me go back to that, because Jeff Burton said it happened three times throughout the race that he was manhandled by Chandler Smith with his car. So he was not at all happy. He took it three times throughout the race out there at Portland.
Yeah, and Chandler was the one that dumped Derek at the Snowball Derby 2 years ago for the win, and we've seen him do it in the Truck Series before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of dirty driving by him. He just doesn't learn, but, oh, well, I guess that's just the way it is. But anyways, congrats to Cole Custer on the win. It was a win that was desperately needed this year. I mean, he hasn't had the best of luck. You know, he's had good cars, but he just hasn't had the best of luck. And, congrats on the win. And, man, Justin Allgaier just keeps on. Yeah, him and Austin Hill with the top five finish. I mean, you know, Sheldon Creed, you know, still, you know, continue to get his top 10 finishes, you know, which is huge. You know, and then, of course, you know, like you mentioned, John Hunter Nemechek, you know, finishing in the 10th spot. I know the last race, I guess it was Sam Mayer and someone else had gotten into it at the last race. I don't know if one of the drivers would happen with Sam Mayer, but he picked up the third place this week, which was big for Junior Motorsports, you know, getting the, you know, having Josh Berry finish in the eighth spot. Josh Berry's been doing a lot of driving too, with the, filling in, you know, in the, on the Cup side.
Yeah, three of the junior motorsports drivers were in the top four, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was neat to see that. Justin, Sam, and Josh. So, and then to see the Stuart Haas, especially after that big hit they took last week in the Cup Series with Chase Briscoe and the $250,000 fine and 120 points, you know, to get their Xfinity car up in victory lane. You know, I'm sure that was a huge confidence booster for the team.
Yes, indeed. That was really big for sure.
Cole should have had the win the night before too in the ARCA series win race.
Yeah, that's when Landon Lewis kind of it was a battle between Landon Lewis and Cole Custer. Cole ended up second, but I would say overall it was a pretty good weekend for Cole Custer.
Oh yeah, it was, you know, getting, you know, the second and the first, you know, if it would have been for that last caution in the ARCA race, Cole would have won that race. But, you know, but then to come back, you know, and win this one, I'm sure what he learned, whatever he learned on Friday, I'm sure, you know, helped him out, you know, on Saturday, you know, to, you know, get to know the track a little bit better. And that's why these drivers, you know, will race, you know,
exactly,
the day before, you know, on these tracks.
And
you
it
know,
was
just
a close
get the
one.
Experience.
It was a close finish, Sal. The margin of victory was 0.142 thousandths of a second. So that's a pretty close victory.
Yeah, it is. That's a really close victory.
Okay. Now, we did have some drivers who had some issues this race. Brendan Poole was out on lap 15 because of an accident. Stefan Parsons had an overheating issue. That took him out of the race on lap 17. It was a transmission issue taking Mason Maggio out of the race on lap 28. A tie rod issue for Parker Chase. He was out on lap 36. A rear gear issue for Kyle Sieg took him out of the race on lap 46. Daniel Hemric finished the race running, but he only was able to get 47 laps of the 77 laps in. So he was a little short on laps there. Raleigh Herbst had an engine issue that took him out of the race on lap 65. And then Leland Honeyman had an accident that took him out one lap short of the full race. He was out on lap 76. So there were 27 drivers who all finished on the lead lap and several others who did finish. Let's see, 4 or 5 other drivers that finished a lap or more down. Your thoughts there?
Yeah, it was, you know, like I said, you know, the top three, you know, Cole, Justin, Sam, Josh Berry, Austin Hill, Matt Snyder, Sheldon Creed, Connor Mozak, Chandler Smith and John Hunter Nemechek. You know, like I said, once again, you know, congrats on them, you know, getting their respective top 10. I expected a little bit more out of Riley Herbst on Saturday too. You know,
he had his issues on Friday.
You know, then he comes back on Saturday and then has an engine issue. You know, then Dylan Lupton,
yeah,
too, you know, who came out to run. He did double duty, too. He ran Friday and Saturday.
Mm-hmm. I was happy to see his name on the entry list, but a little disappointed in the finishes. I thought he might do a little bit better than he did.
Yeah, but all in all, you know what? They put on a good show for the fans out there in Portland.
Good.
And it seemed like the weather was nice out there.
Yeah, it was. Let's go over the points before we run out of time, Sal.
Okay, so then now we're going to go to the points. Let me see right here. J-Ski points, driver points, more points. Driver points. John Hunter Nemechek leading the points. Austin Hill in second. Justin Allgaier in third. Cole Custer fourth. Josh Berry fifth. Chandler Smith rounds out the top six. And then from there, then we go to Sheldon Creed in seventh, Sammy Smith in eighth, Sam Mayer in ninth, Riley Herbst in tenth, Daniel Hemric in 11th, and Brandon Jones rounds out the top 12 The 13th spot is Jeb Burton, but Jeb has that win, so actually it'll put Brandon Jones down on the it'll put Brandon Jones down in 13th and put Daniel Hamrick will be on the bubble.
Jeb Burton moves to 12 and Brandon Jones moves down to 13th.
Yeah, with the win. So Austin Hill still leading the series with 3 wins, and John Hunter Nemechek right behind with 2 wins, and of course Justin Allgaier with 1. Cole Custer finally got his 1 win, and both Chandler and Sammy Smith each have a win apiece, along with Jeb Burton. It's his win.
That's right. So that's what, 4, 5, 6, 7 of the 12 drivers. So that means there's only 5 open in the Xfinity series to get in on points at this point.
Yeah, because Ryan Truex has the other win, but he's not eligible for the.
Yeah, he's a part-time.
He's a part-timer.
Okay, let's look at the races that are left here for the Xfinity Series. 2 more races in the month of June at Sonoma next week, and then afterward they'll race at Nashville Super Speedway on June the 24th. That's 2 races. Then they have several races, 5 races in the month of July, beginning with the Chicago Street Race on July 1st, Atlanta Motor Speedway on the 8th, July 15th, New Hampshire Motor Speedway, Pocono Raceway on July 22nd, and July 29th is the race at Road America. So that's 7 races left. In August, they have Michigan International Speedway on the 5th, Indianapolis Motor Speedway's road course on the 12th, Watkins Glen International on August 19th, and Daytona International Speedway on August 25th. So that's what? 4 more races, so that's 11. In September, they have 2 races, Darlington Raceway on the 2nd, and then Kansas Speedway is their season finale on September the 9th. So that's 13 more races here. So this is the midpoint for the Xfinity Series. They'll be starting the second half of their regular season at Sonoma Raceway next week.
Wow, yeah, you know what? Gosh, I mean, even though I'm not going, but I probably had the trucks been running again this year like they ran last year, I probably would have went ahead and put in, you know, and try to get up to Sonoma this weekend. But with the you know, with it being the Xfinity, you know, and actually I still should have gone, because usually it's just the Cup and it's usually just the Cup and the ARCAs are the only 2 races that, you know, run at Sonoma.
Okay. Well, Dylan is here, so why don't you do a lead up for him and then I'll bring him into the queue so you can go ahead and introduce him.
Okay. Our guest for tonight is gonna be Dylan Zampa. We were gonna have him a couple weeks ago, but then we had some scheduling changes. Dylan just won his first SRL Southwest Tour race, super late model. Awesome battle between him and Jacob Gomes the last, I don't know, 20, 30 laps of the race. It was a very well-deserving win. And I'll tell you, it made for a good night of racing, especially with all the wrecks and everything that they had. And I think we only finished with 7 or 8 cars, but those 2 cars up front really made for one heck of a race to just take your mind off everything that was going on. But anyways, with that, you know, it was an exciting win. Congratulations again to the whole Zampa family, you know, and everyone involved with the team. And with that, we want to welcome Dylan to the show. Welcome to the show, Dylan.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me again.
So you finally got that that super late model win that's kind of in a sense way eluding you, and it's kind of been hanging there in front of you. Gosh, your team your team, your family put so much work and effort into your racing, you know, and it was neat, you know, to see, you know, how the whole race, how it played out. And then especially at the end, you know, the battle that you and Jacob Gomes had, gosh, it was, gosh, I'll tell you, that was one for the ages.
Yeah, you know, that was probably one of the most intense races I've been in. Only finishing with, I think, 6 cars on the racetrack, starting with 15. So, you know, we kind of played our cards right, and we were able to, you know, avoid wrecks and you know, kind of make our way through and get to the lead. And, you know, getting the lead from Austin, and then, you know, getting kind of a gap put in between us, and I started saving tires because I knew Jacob was fast. And when my spotter said that he cleared the 11, you know, I kind of waited, and then he got to my bumper, and then I moved to the top to try to take his line away. And, you know, we definitely didn't have, you know, the greatest car all weekend. You know, my team worked really, really hard on the car from unloading the trailer. And, you know, we got the car pretty, pretty close in qualifying, and then having a flat tire right before the race and having to change it and going through all these ups and downs through the whole year, not even just this weekend. And it feels really, really good to get that win. That's a big bucket list win right there for sure.
You know, and when you think about it, it don't matter where you were on the track, nobody was safe. If you're in the lead, you are not safe. If you're in the middle, you're not safe. If you're at the end, you're not safe. There's wrecks all around the track in that race. And I couldn't believe how long it took to run the race and all the wrecks. I was talking with Brian afterwards, Brian Olson, and he said, I go, Brian, for as few cars that were on the track, I could not believe. I mean, right out the gate, we had the one with John Moore and Cole Raz that knocked Cole Raz completely out of the race. You know, and then, like you said, you know, it seemed like everybody got hit at one time or another.
Yeah, it was a hectic race for sure, you know. But yeah, you know, I don't even know what was going on and what people were thinking. But our plan right out of the gate was try to get some positions on restarts and then conserve and then kind of just keep going at restarts because we knew we were going to get competition yellows. And you know, the first lap wreck, I was running the bottom, so I didn't even know that wreck happened. And then the wreck with Dan Holtz and Cale Kanky and Shepard and Bowman and all those guys, that I was right in the middle of that one. That one was scary because Dan Holtz was sliding down the front stretch and I was turning left and right, and I was, you know, all over the place trying to avoid it. And luckily we were able to just barely sneak by, and that's what got us the lead was in that wreck right there. And we were kind of able to just kind of control – we were not really able to control the pace because Jacob was so fast, but we were able to kind of conserve tires. And I think me getting to the lead and conserving a little bit is kind of what won us that race, I feel like, because if we would have pushed it and tried to get a bigger gap, I felt like Jacob would have been able to get by us.
So you and Jacob are going back and forth battling, and, you know, Jacob's getting up to you, you know, and I mean, I'm sure going through your mind, you probably knew, you know, Jacob, you know, he's not that driver, you know, who's going to be, you know, like one of the other drivers, you know, who wants to win. Plus, the way the series has been going, you start off the modifieds with Travis Thurkettle, who's won all 4 races. Then you go to Lenny White, who's won all 4 races. And then Jacob Gomes comes in, and he's on a 3-win, you know, a 3-race win streak, you know, looking for his 4th one. You know, and the way you guys battled, you know, it almost, you know, looked like Jacob was saving what he could for the end. But when you're coming through the line, you know, and you go through the checkered flag, what was going through your mind?
Yeah, you know, when he got to 2nd, you know, and I knew that he, you know, roughed up Herzog a little bit to get by him. You know, just that's just racing, you know. But I knew I was in the back of my mind. I'm like, he's most likely, if he can't get by me, he's most likely going to, you know, lay the bumper down, you know, to get by me. And I was just waiting, and every single lap, each corner going in, I was just, you know, just praying that I was getting ready to, you know, get hit, and, you know, it never came. So what made me, you know, not miss my mark at all, because I was just like, if I hit the mark every single time, then I'll know what to do. So that made a big difference also with not making a mistake at all. And but going across the finish line and my spotter saying, checkered flag, you just won, that was probably, you know, I was kind of utter belief. You know, I thought I was in a dream. I almost had to pinch myself almost, you know. I never thought I was going to be in that position so early in the year. You know, as a rookie team, I felt like it was going to take, more than half the season to kind of get in our rhythm. But, you know, all the cards played out right, and we ended up in victory lane. And the victory kind of hit me once I got back to the trailer. And, you know, my dad was like, oh, my God, we're the only father-son duo to win an SRL Southwest Tour race. And, you know, that's kind of where it hit me. I was like, wow, we just made history right there.
Yeah, that was neat. And you know what, Dad, Dylan, our show host Sharon, I know she has some questions for you, so I'm gonna pass over to Sharon for this week. She can ask the questions she has. Sharon.
Yeah, Dylan, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate you taking the time to be here with us.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
Okay. Well, you mentioned your dad. One of the questions I was going to ask you is, I always like hearing about the support that you get kind of behind the scenes that a lot of times we don't, you know, the fans don't get to see who are the people behind the scenes that are making things happen for you as a driver. Talk about the relationship with you and your dad, and congratulations on the fact that you guys made history with that victory in the Spears SRL Southwest Touring Series.
Yeah, thank you. You know, me and my dad, you know, he's the one that got me into racing. He's also the one that hung up his racing suit pretty early in his career to let me and my brother, you know, start racing. And my brother, you know, he just got back from college, so he's on a summer break, so he's going to be racing again. So we're going to be back to a two-car team. So, you know, he's going to have a little bit more on his plate, and he's probably not going to like it. But, you know, my dad, you know, he's amazing. You know, he sacrifices a lot to have me and my brother both pursue our dreams, and especially my mom as well. You know, I can't leave her out. You know, she's a big, big part of the race team. You know, she's always making sure everyone's fed and, you know, making sure everyone has some type of water, you know, soda. She's always making sure everyone's fed and up, you know, ready to go for anything that is going to get thrown our way. And, you know, everyone on our crew, Joe Roderick, he's always at our house 24/7 almost. Sometimes even on weekends, he's over. You know, it's just a team effort. And RJ Johnson, you know, he's always, you know, texting me and my dad, you know, we're just trying to figure out how to get faster. John Michael, he's always, you know, just there to help with anything. Chuck Earl, he's, you know, always there making sure our tires are perfect. So it's just a whole team effort. It's not just, you know, one person. It's a whole team effort. And without my team, I definitely wouldn't be where I am right now.
Absolutely. And that's why I like to give you an opportunity to kind of highlight those folks that are behind the scenes. So thank you for that. Because it's not just the driver, it's a whole crew of people behind you that are kind of helping and supporting you. But Dylan, I also want the fans to get to know who Dylan Zampa is. So we know racing is a huge part of your life. But what is it that you're willing to share with us about Dylan Zampa that most folks don't know about you?
You know, I don't know. A lot of people don't know this, but me and my brother, we try to play golf once a weekend if we can. He just got back, so we've almost golfed every weekend since he's been back. So, you know, I like to go out and, you know, hit some balls on the golf course with my brother. You know, having a good time. Me, my mom, and my dad and my brother actually just played some golf yesterday, actually. So that was pretty fun. You know, getting to see my dad with his wonky swing was pretty fun. So it's always a good time to you know, get some family time outside of racing. That's always good. So, but you know, we're it's Monday, so we're back in the race shop and trying to get faster still. So.
Okay, well, that sounds awesome. Sal, if you don't write an article about Dylan Zampa and the Zampa family, I think I will. Dylan, would you mind if we do that?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Okay, and one last question. When you're not racing in the Spears SRL Southwest Touring Series, are there any other series that you race in, Dylan?
Yeah, we... This year, John Moore has created a JAM Environmental Wild West Super Series at All American Speedway.
Yes.
So it's also super late models. So we've been running that. We've been running that as well, and we've had really good success there as well. We've got two wins out of the two first races they've had this year. So that race is actually going to be right after the Kern race, I think. So. We'll be back at Roseville right after Kern with the Spears Southwest Tour, and we might run some Madera races. So we'll see about that. But right now we're just trying to work on the Super Pro Lates. Will always be my home. You know, that's where I started. They're really, really fun cars. Really good competition in them. Every series has great competition. So, but. Hopefully we can get out at Madera. I'd love to hop back in the Pro Late a couple times this year as well. But All American Speedway and the Spear Southwest Tour is where I'm running right now.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks, Dylan, for coming on the show. And, Sal, I'll let you wrap it up, but you're going to have to let me know if you or I are going to write this article about Dylan and his family.
Okay, yeah, for sure. You know, Dylan, one last question. How did this whole deal come through with Apache?
That came through with my dad and Randy Hendricks, you know, working something out with Sean and, you know, everyone at Apache. You know, we were just looking, you know, looking for sponsors to, you know, just help with, you know, stuff at the racetrack, and he was able to, and Sean and everyone at Apache was able to, you know, agree to help us through the season. You know, they're great help, great guys. Hope to see them get a win here soon and maybe at Irwindale or Kern. So, that'll be cool. I'll definitely be down in Victory Lane with him. So, we have really, really good sponsors this year. They're all amazing, great people. I hope to, you know, keep moving up the ranks with each sponsor. That would be pretty cool. So, so Apache and Sean and just everyone at Apache has been great this year.
That's awesome. And with that, Dylan, you know what? We're going to give you a chance to give any more shout outs you have before we close the interview. If you want to give a shout out to the rest of your sponsors, to your team or whatever, this is the part of the show, you know, where you get your chance to do all that.
Yeah, first off, I'd like to thank Sierra Speed Technology and Randy Hedricks for giving me the opportunity to drive his super late model. Apache Rental Group as well, Reeves Complete Automotive Center, Anderson Logging, Valley Fabrication, Helm Metal Fab, KRC Power Steering, Allied Auto Stores, Allied Propane Services, Swift Springs, and the Kawicki Driver Development Program.
That's neat. You know what? And with that, Dylan, I just want to thank you again, you know, for coming on the show. You know, I'm sure we'll have you on again, you know, later on this season, you know, as the season progresses. I just want to say once again from Fan for Racing, you know, congratulations and good luck the rest of the season. And we'll see you in Kern in 2 weeks.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Okay.
All right. Pleasure.
Okay. Good night.
Okay, that was Dylan Zampa from the Spears Southwest Touring Series. Is it right that he drives the number 29 car, Sal?
The number one.
The
no,
number
no, he,
one.
No, he drove the 29. No, that's right.
Oh,
he drove the 29.
Okay,
yeah,
that's
he drove the
put.
29. Yeah, because sometimes it's the last time it was the one when he drove it, but this time it was a 29.
Okay. Okay, well, always a lot of fun talking to Dylan Zampa, and I thought he gave us a really, really good interview there. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to our Cup Series. They raced out at WWT Raceway. This was the second Cup Series race out there, which is pretty cool. And the winner was Kyle Busch, 38 years old, driving the number 8 3-Chai Chevrolet for Richard Childress Racing. His crew chief, Randall Burnett, this was a home track for Randall Burnett. He comes from the Missouri area, so it was really cool to see him get that victory as well. It was his 63rd victory in 657 Cup Series races, Kyle Busch's third victory and eighth top 10 finish of this season. Also, his first victory and second top 10 finish in the two races at WWT Raceway. Denny Hamlin finished second, posting his first top 10 finish in two races at the track and his sixth top 10 finish of this year. Joey Logano, who was last year's winner, came in third. He posted his second top 10 finish in two races at WWT Raceway. Ty Gibbs finished 20th. He was the highest finishing rookie of this race. And now for a recap, Kyle Busch converted his pole starting position into a victory and collected that 63rd Cup Series victory on Sunday. But the driver of the number 8 RCR Chevrolet had to work hard for that first place money. He survived 5 restarts in the last 40 laps of the Enjoy Illinois 300 and beat Denny Hamlin to the finish line by .517 thousandths of a second after Bubba Wallace's broken brake rotor caused the 11th caution on a lap number 236 and sent the race into overtime. That was his third win this season. Hamlin again finished second, followed by Logano. Then it was Kyle Larson and Martin Truex Jr. rounding out the top 5. Then the next 5 drivers were Ryan Blaney, Daniel Suarez, William Byron, Michael McDowell, and Kevin Harvick. Again, Busch started from the pole in the number 8 RCR Chevrolet. He led 121 laps for the day and took the lead for the final time with 56 laps to go. He remained the leader through 6 restarts in that overtime finish. The race was red flagged for 3 separate occasions. First for 1 hour and 45 minutes on lap 6 due to repeated lightning strikes in the area. The second red flag was due to a track cleanup following a wreck by Noah Gregson on lap 198. And the third for a wall repair after an accident involving Austin Cindric and Austin Dillon and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. on lap 119. Stage 1 was won by Kyle Busch. Stage 2 was won by Ryan Blaney. There were 5 lead changes among 10 drivers, 11 cautions for 67 yellow flag laps. The average speed of this race was 87.508 miles per hour. Sal, your thoughts on those top 10 finishers?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I could never understand the lightning strike thing. I mean, you know, okay, lightning strikes, okay, you know, 5-10 minutes and you go. I can't understand why they have to wait so long to get the race going again, but that's neither.
Yeah, I think it started, Sal, when there was a fan that was hit by lightning a few years ago.
NASA implemented
that plan.
Yeah, but even though the fans still don't hide, they still sit in the stand. So, I mean, you know, it's not NASCAR's fault that, you know, I mean, you can't fix, like they say, you can't fix stupidity. But either way, congrats on Kyle Busch, you know, for on the win, starting on the pole and getting the win. Man, he sure has done a lot with that for this RCR team. I mean, Richard Childress has tried, you know, bringing back Ryan Newman. He's tried, you know, with different drivers. You know, and it seemed like nobody could get it done, you know, and then, you know, he hires Kyle Busch in the off season, you know, to change the program around, and basically Kyle says, okay, we're going to do it my way, you know, and so far, you know, like you said, you know, he's got the 3 wins, you know, congrats on that. Denny Hamlin, another second place finish. You know what? I'm not going to get into all that. Joey Logano with the third place. Joey still continue, you know, to be the, you know, championship form, you know, champion, you know, that he is, you know. You know, then let me see, going down to Kevin Harvick. Gosh, I hope Kevin gets a win before the season is over. You know, this is his last season, you know, and, you know, they already got the, you know, the driver, you know, who's slated that's going to take over his car. But you know what? I don't want to talk about that driver because it's all about Kevin's last season. You know, you got to give Kevin his respect. He's had a lot of years in the series. He's had a lot of wins. You know what? And you know what? And I just really hope that he can grab at least one or two good wins. Michael McDowell, ninth place finish, a top 10. Great job there. William Byron continues to, you know, rack up the top, you know, top 10s and continues to be one of the threats in the series. I really thought this was going to be another Ryan Blaney win, but, you know, he finished his sixth, you know, which is still a good finish for Ryan. And then, of course, fourth was, you know, rounding out the top five, you know, was Martin Truex and Kyle Larson. But once again, congrats to Kyle Busch, you know, on the win. And, you know, he's back and, you know, proving, you know, that he's, you know, he's a threat, you know what. And, you know, all I got to say is watch out all the rest of the drivers because Kyle's getting started, you know what. And I'm not saying he's going to click off a whole bunch of wins, but he's going to click off a lot of good finishes, you know, up until playoff time.
Yes, indeed. Okay, there were 28 cars who finished on the lead lap of this race, which is pretty cool. But a couple of other drivers were still running at the end, but they were one or more laps down. Although they were still running. So let's start with those that had incidents. Carson Hocevar had an accident that took him out of the race on lap 91. Tyler Reddick had an accident. He was able to get to lap 174. And Noah Gregson had an accident that took him out of the race on lap 197. Let's see. A couple of other accidents, Austin Dillon and Bubba Wallace. Austin Dillon had an accident taking him out on lap 223, and Bubba Wallace was out due to an accident on lap 236. Greg Alding was still running, but he finished a lap down, as was Chase Briscoe, but he was multiple laps down, even though he was still running at the end of the race. Your thoughts about any of those situations?
You know what? I didn't really see, but by the time I flew home, got off the plane, and after the second lightning strike, I was laying down watching the race, and I guess I fell asleep and woke up when Kyle Busch crossed the line. So I missed Noah's wreck. I heard it was pretty hard. I heard it was pretty
yeah,
crazy
it was.
Wreck.
It was yeah.
You know,
it was
I heard it pretty hard.
Now, I will say this. I thought I wasn't going to be able to see the race, and I was going to watch kind of the DVR version of the race. And when I got home and I turned on the TV, they were just getting started back. So I was able to catch most of the race live, which was amazing to me because I was totally expecting something totally different when I got home. So I was glad I was able to see the race, although I feel bad for the delay. I guess there were also some issues at the track in addition to the lightning strike sound. There were other issues that were taking place. The internet was down. It had nothing to do with NASCAR, had nothing to do with the track, but some of the teams did not have internet, so they had to call in their service provider in order to get that corrected as well. So it wasn't just the lightning strikes that caused those delays, just as an FYI to you.
Yeah, well, the first delay I know was lightning because we were on the plane. We had just boarded, and we put the internet on, you know, and put it, you know, on FS1 to watch it. And we were waiting for the, you know, and all of a sudden they said lightning strike, so there's a delay. So by the time we flew home and got off the plane, and they were barely getting the race started.
Yeah,
so by the time I drove home from the airport. you know, then when I drove from the airport and got home, then they had the second delay, and I was like, oh, my gosh. I said, here we go, and then, I don't know.
The length of that delay had a lot to do with the Internet going down, too. The first delay, not the second delay, but the first delay.
Okay. So I just thought, you know what, I'll just wait till the delay's over. I was watching TV, and next thing I know, I woke up, and I didn't know I fell asleep. And next thing I know, here's the, you know, Kyle Busch is coming, you know, across the line, you know, then they show the bird out and,
mm-hmm.
you know, picked up his
boy. Let's go ahead and cover the points before we run out of time here, Sal.
Yeah, let me get there.
Okay, Ryan Blaney is still at the top.
Wow, Chastain's dropped. Chastain was up there. He's
mm-hmm.
dropping like a heavy watermelon.
Well, he didn't. He had a rough race out at WWT Raceway this weekend.
Yeah. So, anyways, leading the points is Ryan Blaney with his one win from last weekend at and sitting in second is William Byron with three wins. Kevin Harvick sitting in third with no wins. Martin Truex sitting in fourth with the win. Ross Chastain dropping down all the way to fifth in the points with no wins. Chris Bell with his one win. Kyle Busch, who just picked up his third win in the season, in seventh. And Danny Hamlin rounds out the top eight, who also has a win. And then from there, then we go down to Kyle Larson, who has two wins. Tyler Reddick with one win. Brad Keselowski with no wins in 11th. Joey Logano with one win in 12th. Chris Buescher, 13th, with no wins. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., who still has the one win from the Daytona 500, in 14th. Bubba Wallace is going downhill, sitting in 15th. Daniel Suarez is on the bubble, with sitting in the 16th spot, only 6 points ahead of Alex Bowman, who's sitting in 17th. So, you know what? And actually, when you think about it, where is Chase Elliott? Because they gave Chase Elliott a waiver.
Mm-hmm.
Or there
Chase
he is. Chase Elliott
is 28.
Has a 28, yeah. So Chase has a waiver.
Mm-hmm.
But he don't have a win. But he don't have a win yet.
Yeah, he's got to get that win to get for that waiver
yeah.
to be good. Plus, he was suspended for a race. I suspect
yeah, well,
he was waiver for that too.
Oh well, he has a in the fans' eyes he has a win for
mm-hmm.
what he did to Hamlin. So the fans to the fans that's a win.
Okay, let me just make a point here too about stage wins. If you think stage wins don't make a difference, William Byron has 17 playoff points to Kyle Busch's 16 playoff points. They both have three wins, but William Byron has 7 stage wins. So that is kind of good. That could be a big deal when it comes to their seeding at the start of the playoffs. So the only other driver with double-digit playoffs points is Kyle Larson. He has the two wins and two stage wins, but those stage wins take on a big significance for these drivers as they continue to play out their season as well.
Oh yeah, when you think about it, you look at the watermelon man. He's got 5 stage wins and 5 playoff
mm-hmm.
points. You know, so he's not too far behind on the stage wins behind William Byron. He gets that one win and locks himself in. Those stage wins are going to be huge.
Well, those stage wins, those 5 stage wins that Chastain has, is the same amount of points he would have, playoff points, if he had a victory. So he would get 5 more with a victory, and that would really put him up there. Now, the Cup Series, they have 15 races in to their 26-race regular season. So they have, what's that make it? They have another 11 races left in their regular season. So their season ends in their season ends actually on August the 26th at Daytona International Speedway, and then they start their playoff round of 16 on September 3rd at Darlington. So 11 races to go here for the Cup Series.
Yeah.
Okay, we are already at the top of the hour here, and we're past it, in fact. So we're going to have to say goodbye, Sal, but thanks. It was great having
All right.
you back.
Okay, thanks, everyone. You guys have a good weekend. Be safe, and we'll talk to you next week. All right, good night,
All
everyone.
All right, take care, Sal. All right, we're ready for NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off, and we have a couple of Sanford Racing crew members here tonight. We'll start with Andy Lasky. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Hey, Sharon, how you doing tonight?
Doing real well. Looking forward to our Hot Topic Sound Off here tonight. We also have joining us Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Well, thank you, Sharon, but I got to admit that I ran into Mike intentionally, so I think Mike ran into me intentionally, so he's been suspended this week. Is that why he's not here?
No, I think he's enjoying his vacay this week, so we'll look forward to having him back when he returns. No on-track incidents here.
Okay, I get the feeling that's what a lot of our hot topics going to be about tonight.
It could be. I think you're probably right. Andy, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, why don't we get started with that one? Jay, I wanted to let you know I did look at the SMT data, and Mike did hit you intentionally. That's why he is suspended for this week. But, let's talk about this one from yesterday. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sharon.
I was going to say, I think it might have to – the hitting might have more to do with disagreements than on-track incidents.
That is actually quite plausible, so we'll go with that one. But, so yesterday in the Cup race, first off, a really good race, I thought, at Gateway. I enjoyed it. But Austin Cindric and Austin Dillon actually got together on the front straightaway, and the contact between the two competitors sent Dillon up into the wall. And after the race, he commented that he felt it was intentional and thought that Cindric deserves the same penalty that Chase Elliott incurred this week, in addition to what Bubba Wallace incurred last year. So thoughts on that?
Okay, Jay, I think Grandpa agreed with him too. So what are your thoughts?
Well, it goes back to the Chase Elliott one. There was a lot of talk about that throughout the weekend, obviously. President was interviewed and made the statement that they didn't necessarily want to suspend Chase Elliott, but did based on the SMT data. And there was an angle. I will go back and say this. I know Andy, I don't think, heard it the other night. I saw an angle where it definitely looked like Chase Elliott had straightened out, then turned left. So, like I said, I wasn't going to disagree with NASCAR doing the suspension. What I don't want to see is what we're having happening now. And there were some comments from fans, I don't know about drivers, but from fans anyway, wanting to see suspensions from the Xfinity Series race as well. And Larry Reynolds talked about it on Race Hub tonight. We're going to get into the box where if somebody touches somebody, they're going to cry, hey, suspend him. He did it intentionally. Check the data. And they interviewed a lot of drivers. I know Kevin Harvick was one. He went back to he felt he should have used it or learned from it at Bristol when Chase Elliott ran into him. I'm trying to remember who the other one that they went back wanted to go back and use data from. But that it is a tool to be used, but it can also persuade you one way or another. And all data can use it to your advantage to try and make your point and kind of twist it. So I'm not against them using it, but I don't think they should strictly rely on that. The deal with Austin Cindric and Austin Dillon, I'm watching a second replay. It maybe looked like Dillon or Cindric came up a little, but most of it looked like Dillon actually came down. and it certainly wasn't anything that was an intention or a retaliation. Maybe I think it was, again, Larry McReynolds that said a mistake was made. He got in too deep or got into his corner, but did not turn into him, trying to hook him, trying to wreck him or anything like that. So I don't see if there needs to be any kind of even repercussions from this. As somebody pointed out, and I don't remember whose tweet it was, NASCAR didn't even hold or penalize Austin Cindric during the race as far as aggressive driving. So I think this is a done deal. And like I said, I just don't want to see – hold on a minute. Wait, lay down. Sorry. That get to the point where, as we say, Larry Mack referred to other sports or racing sports where you have a steward and, you know, you even come close to touching somebody and they want to have somebody put you in the pits or a penalty. And I don't want to see that either. So I think this one needs to go away, just be done.
Yeah, I think the possibility of opening Pandora's box is certainly here. NASCAR has said that they will review it. But here's the deal. When you look at the video, well, there's two things that I think is really interesting about this. First of all, before I get into the video, I think it's interesting that Dylan and I think his grandpa said this too, but I know Dylan said it, that he felt that Cindric hit him in retaliation. So that tells me in retaliation for what? Did he do something aggressive earlier in the race that maybe he should be penalized for? So I think there's an admission of guilt there when he talks about Cindric doing something in retaliation. But in the other point here is that when I look at the video, I've seen a couple of different angles, and in both of those angles, it looks to me like Austin Cindric is holding his line. He doesn't veer left or right, and it's Austin Dillon that veers toward Cindric's car, and that's what caused the accident. He wasn't clear of Cindric when he veered that direction. And then, of course, when they touch, he ended up spinning into the wall. So I do think that it is good that there is SMT data that NASCAR can look at and kind of get an idea of what happened there. But from everything that I've seen, it looked to me like Austin Dillon was holding his line, and the only car that actually moves is Austin Dillon's. So why does it always have to be Kyle and Kyle or Austin and Austin? It's hard to have the conversation when you've got two with the same first name there. But anyway, I don't think there's a penalty needed in this case or suspension. I think it was just Dillon getting loose and it was a racing incident, if you will. It was good, hard racing. I don't see any need. I'd like to see the video of what Dillon feels Austin might have been retaliating for, because it tells me that Dillon must have been aggressive earlier in the race, Dandy.
Yeah, I tend to agree with both of you on this one. You know, having watched the replay a few times, you know, over the past couple of days, I felt like Cindric held his line down the front straightaway, and Austin Dillon moved up and wrecked himself, quite frankly. And, you know, then after the race complained that, you know, that it was intentional and that Cindric should be suspended. And it's like, this is a bit of a slippery slope here. You know, if every single time an incident happens on the racetrack, these guys start crying about, you know, oh, so-and-so needs to be suspended and this and that. Like, I don't think that's a good direction to head in. If it's blatant, like I felt like the Bubba Wallace and Chase Elliott incidents were, if it's blatant, you know, then it warrants a penalty. But on-track racing incidents are going to happen, whether they're intentional or not, you know, and I don't know that we should be, you know, digging too deep into the data and suddenly penalizing drivers all the time for racing incidents. And that's exactly what this was. Now, the two may have had history, and it sounded like did have history, perhaps from earlier in the race. But I really do think in this case, Dillon screwed up and tried to blame it on Cindric, you know, and that's really kind of where it ends for me. So I don't think Austin Cindric deserves any kind of a penalty. You know, it's got it from in my mind. It really needs to be blatant to warrant the penalty, and I just didn't see it in this case. So hopefully the data will back that up, because I would be pretty disappointed to see Cindric get you know, taken out of race, because it just did not seem egregious on his part.
Okay. Jay, your follow-up?
Well, and Andy used a really good word. I know, Sharon, you like to use this as well, the slippery slope.
Yeah.
Is what we're kind of looking at here. And I didn't even really pick up on the fact that, like you said, of Austin Dillon and Richard Childress were saying they felt it was payback. You get into the situation where the one that gets punished is in a fight, when you talk about a fight, gets in trouble is one, normally you catch the one throwing the second punch, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's whoever starts it gets away with it, because it's when the retaliation come that it gets, they put the focus on it, and then the one doing the second punch or retaliating is the one that gets in trouble. So that could kind of lead towards, hey, hit somebody before they hit me. But I'm with you guys on this. I think it was just a racing deal. And the thing that also I think is going to come into play, I know they talked about it, is your tracks where it's higher speed. Not that it isn't dangerous anytime you're in a race car on any kind of track, but getting hooked into a wall at a high rate of speed. Your slower tracks, the road course, I know it, talking about the Xfinity Series at Portland, nobody even hit a wall because it was just, you just lost all your track position because you spin off into the grass or into the gravel pits. And that might come into play too then of it's not as dangerous. But again, if it's a clear, obvious, intentional hooking or wrecking or, you know, driving them off the track, you know, I appreciate NASCAR looking into it, because a lot of the drivers said you got to protect the drivers from themselves. And I can't think of who it was again now either. I'll go back. Brandon Paul, I think, is his name, from Flow Racing, was talking about it, of how ironic it is of the answer is always to let the drivers police it themselves. And he compared it to, let's just go with football. If you have the unnecessary roughness or holding or something, you don't let the players officiate that themselves, you know. And in racing, you're talking about an even higher risk. So NASCAR does need to be aware of these things. I kind of understand, hey, the drivers will take care of it themselves, whether it be in the garage area. Hopefully it's not out on the track, but it also can be done on the track in a manner that isn't high risk and dangerous. And we talk about Ryan Newman, his is just because of who he is as a racer, but you can make their life difficult to get around, pass, whatever, without wrecking them, you know, and putting them into the wall. Unfortunately, at times it comes to that. We all know that under that intense pressure and split second thought process, the timing of it goes badly, but I think we can see it without it being that that way.
Okay, I'm just going to bring up the other side of the coin here, if you will. I did see a post earlier today. Couch Racer posted, the Cindric Dillon incident shouldn't even be in consideration for a penalty. Let's not get ridiculous. Freddie Kraft responded to that and said, oh boy, TJ showed me some details this morning that may contradict this statement. So then he goes on another post and says, I see a lot of back and forth on here about this Dillon Cindric wreck. What if I told you it's possible that Dillon came up and Cindric hooked him? I'm not sure that I buy that one. I don't think Cindric had any intention of hooking Dillon if he did hook him. But to me, a hook is when you make a direct left turn into another driver, and I did not see that at all from Cindric. I saw Dillon come up, and Cindric did hit him once Dillon came up, but it was Dillon making that move up the track Cindric was holding his line and probably didn't have a chance to respond to Dylan coming up the track. So I think it's interesting, though, to see Freddie Kraft kind of posting that out on Twitter. So just playing the other side of the coin there, I still believe it's not worthy of a penalty, and I don't think it was a blatant hooking of a driver for retaliation or anything like we saw with Bubba Wallace or with Chase Elliott. So to me, no penalty, no suspensions, and we just move on from here. Andy, you get the follow-up.
Yeah, I agree with you, Sharon. You know, I just have to think that, you know, we really don't want to go down this path of suspending drivers for every little thing that happens on the racetrack. You know, I think there are some, you know, obviously some blatant incidents that, you know, I just talked about that, you know, warrant a penalty. But in this case, I don't know. I mean, I had tried to look at the TV replay a few times, and I really didn't see Cindric move, you know, and if he did, it wasn't much. But even if he did move a little bit, it is possible that as he was moving potentially down the racetrack, Dylan came up the racetrack, and that's why the two collided. I really think it was just a racing incident. You know, I don't know that Cindric has the reputation of being dirty like that. I don't know that he does, so it would be surprising to me to see him do something like that anyway. So, you know, I just would hate to see somebody get suspended when they really didn't try to wreck somebody on purpose. So it'll be interesting, I guess, to see what comes out in the next couple of days, if anything. I hope nothing, because I really don't want to see this become a common theme here as the season goes on.
Yeah, I totally agree, Andy. I think we're all in agreement with that. Okay, Jay, go ahead and take us to our next topic. Are you still there, Jay? Maybe he's on mute. Are you on mute?
I was on mute, talking away while on mute. Since Mike's not here, I will bring up a topic he posted and represent him here. I know he likes to get on particular drivers, but I think there's some validity to this one. It says we're less than halfway through the season, and KFB is one win away from tied Austin Dillon on the all-time RCR list. Austin Dillon has 4 wins in nearly a decade at RCR. Kyle Busch got his 3rd with the RCR, which ties him with Reddick and Gordon. So is it time for Austin Dillon to really look in the mirror and look at where he's at, or the team to look at that as far as him as a driver, I guess?
Okay, Andy, your thoughts?
Well, it's a valid point, but it's hard to make a comparison between Kyle Busch and Austin Dillon. It's no secret that Kyle Busch is a Hall of Fame driver and has had a Hall of Fame career to this point, and will only continue to add to that. I can't say the same for Austin Dillon. Now, he is a Truck Series and Xfinity Series champion. We know that. Certainly had his share of success in lower series, but his Cup career has kind of just been okay. You know, I can't really call it a fantastic Cup career, you know, and I think that when you see what Tyler Reddick has done and when you see what Kyle Busch has done in the 8 car, it really sheds light on that, to be frank. So is it time for him to hang it up necessarily? I don't think so, but my own opinion is that you'll probably see him meander off into management world at some point in the coming years. But I mean, it's hard to compare the two. Kyle Busch is just head and shoulders a better talent, you know, and his career backs that up. That's not saying that Austin Dillon is a bad driver. I'm not saying that at all, but it's just a fact that some drivers are elite and some are not. And I think that that's the example in play here.
Okay, and I just want to clarify, and I apologize if I'm repeating here, but I'm not sure if Jay said this, but in Mike's post about this, he says, Austin Dillon has 4 wins in nearly a decade at RCR. KFB, or I should say Kyle Busch, got his third RCR win, tying him with Reddick and Gordon. I just want to clarify that the Gordon that they're talking about here is Robbie Gordon and not Jeff Gordon. So, yeah, those two drivers both had three wins at RCR. But, yeah, I think it's unfair to compare him with Kyle Busch for sure. Kyle Busch is the winningest driver in NASCAR right now, and there's not many drivers that you can compare to Kyle Busch. And as far as Reddick and Gordon, Reddick is a pretty darn good driver. He did not do so well this past weekend in his race at WWT Raceway. I think he ended up finishing well down the finishing order here. Let me see if I can get that again. So even Reddick has races that are not always the best days for him. Yeah, he finished 35th out of a 36-car field, but that was because of an accident. I will mention that. So, you know, everybody has their moments, but Austin Dillon, I think, has been at RCR, and he has had some success in the lower tiers, both the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series. And I think I would compare him with a driver like maybe Justin Allgaier. Maybe the Cup Series is not where Austin Dillon belongs. Maybe it would be better for him to go to back to the Xfinity Series and be more competitive in that series. I think he would be competitive in the Xfinity Series, and he would get a whole lot more wins. And that's exactly what Justin Allgaier did. So I think there are possibilities for Austin Dillon. And I will say this year it seems like he's been more competitive than he has in previous years. But at this stage of his career, it seems like he should be doing better than what he is. So it might be time for him to consider maybe dropping down to the Xfinity Series, or maybe it's time for him to take a management role within the RCR organization in preparation for when RC decides to retire. I don't think he's ready to do that yet, but I'm just saying that time is going to come at some point. Jay?
Yeah, I see both sides to it. We'll start with the fact of comparing the drivers, and you guys hit on it. You are talking about comparing one of the elite, and not just in the NASCAR Cup Series, across the board, Xfinity trucks, go-karts, wagons. I mean, you put Kyle Busch in something, he's going to win in it. So, and Austin Dillon recognized that. He's the one that initiated the conversation to bring Kyle Busch over there when there was that possibility of him leaving Joe Gibbs Racing. So that's known, okay? In the years that we've seen RCR kind of build back towards the top, we've seen improvement from Austin Dillon, but not to the same level as what we see some other drivers. You mentioned Tyler Reddick coming in. As he started winning his races and that program building towards the top, Austin Dillon was definitely running better week in and week out. I know he's had a rough season so far, a start to this season anyway, going, but you're right. There's still been that better consistent run, so the cars are getting better. That's one thing. But then I also, on the other side, look at it of you're giving him all this time, and I don't know if the 10 years is actually correct, but it's been a while. I wouldn't have realized it was 10 years, I guess, that he's been given that opportunity to develop and try and improve. Daniel Hemric was only given 1 year. And that's where I'm like, okay, if you're only willing to give Daniel Hemric 1 year, he didn't win a race, he's out. Now, again, they could get the better talent of Tyler Reddick. That was shown. He came in and won with it. Okay. But I also look back at history, Richard Childress stepped out of his own car to put a talent in, and that talent was Dale Earnhardt. So maybe Austin Dillon has to say, hey, if we want to win races and championships and there's a better driver available, I need to step out.
Okay, Andy, your follow-up?
I think Jay brings up an excellent point here. You know, it's no secret that as Richard Childress gets older, I think when you look at Austin's father, Mike Dillon, as being, you know, a team principal over there, that's probably the direction that ownership's going to go. I think the Dillons will have a fair amount of, you know, a fair amount of say and probably a big presence in that team and its future moving forward. So eventually you have to make business decisions. And I think that, you know, if the team, you know, had the opportunity to bring in another elite driver to pair with Kyle Busch, that could possibly lead to the long-term success of the team moving forward, you know, and certainly that's something I think they would have to look at. So that's a really good point that Jay brought up there, because it's true. And, you know, sometimes you have to do what's best for the team. And, you know, certainly, you know, if you could, it's hard to put a name on it, but if you could get a Kyle Busch type talent, you know, and pair him with Kyle Busch, then certainly that's a fantastic direction to consider moving forward. So it'll be interesting to see what they do, but it's definitely been interesting to see Kyle come in his first year with that team and run so well, you know, and win all these races for sure.
Yeah, I think those are all really, really good points. Another point that's kind of occurred to me as we're talking here as well is that let's keep in mind that RCR as an organization has not been running all that great since Dale Earnhardt left. There were the Kevin Harvick days, and Kevin Harvick kind of carried that organization. But, you know, he moved on to Stuart Haas Racing, and I think that left a huge hole at RCR, along with the retirement of Jeff Burton. And I really think that, in all fairness to Austin Dillon, he might not be the guy that can reorganize that team, being as close to it as he is. So they needed somebody like a Kyle Busch, and you brought it up. Austin Dillon was the one who recognized that they needed somebody like a Kyle Busch to come in and help them reorganize the organization. Let me interrupt myself, because we are at that point of the show where I do need to make an announcement to our first-time listeners, if they're tuning in for the first time. You may not know that we go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. However, we do continue the conversation and record that part of the conversation that then becomes part of our bonus overtime material on our podcast. So I will go out on Twitter and Facebook and let you know when the podcast is available. And at that point, or any time at your earliest convenience, you can fast forward to the two-hour mark and hear the rest of our conversation that goes on after we go off the air. So, again, don't want anybody to be caught off guard and not know how they can hear the rest of the our conversation, and that's why we do this announcement. But I think Austin Dillon is the one who recognized, and this was brought up earlier, that they needed somebody like a Kyle Busch to come into that organization. I think Tyler Reddick did some things that helped elevate them a little bit last year, but Kyle Busch is going to do so much more as one of the best drivers in the series right now to help elevate that organization. And I think it shows in the results that Austin Dillon is getting. But I do think he needs to really look at himself and consider what other options there might be for him. And you guys are right. Maybe it's time for him to step aside and let another up-and-coming driver come in there and really elevate that organization. And let Kyle Busch, while they've got him, let him kind of train that next new talent that's coming in for the future of the organization. Jay?
You hit on a couple of key things there, Sharon, of a talent that not only can win races, but change the direction in the ship, turn the ship of a company. And you mentioned it when Dale Earnhardt passed, RCR went through some tough years, But Kevin Harvick was still winning races and contending for championships. He didn't win one there, but was winning races. And in the latter part, though, it got where even he as a driver couldn't carry the organization. Austin Dillon, obviously, as you said, is not that driver that can make that direction and change the direction of the company. So you bring that driver in. But then with that, as that change happens and one team starts winning, you got to look at why the other one isn't. And I know it's tough. I mean, we talk about Hendrick Motorsports for many years being a three-car team. It always seemed like one or two of them was running good, one not. In the past few years, they've had it where all four are very competitive, but even Alex Bowman gets talked about as two races a year in contention, solid driver, winning a race or two per year, but not dominating and winning like some of the other drivers. You know, so that gets looked at of as to why. And that's where I think that they need to look at the RCR team. And I know some of it can be then, well, maybe it's a little thing of driver and crew chief. And I know that was one of the changes they did make. And I cannot remember his name, but the crew chief that Austin Dillon had in his Truck Series and Xfinity Series, they brought him back. That didn't pan out as they thought, and he is no longer there in that role anyway. I don't remember if he stayed within the RCR organization.
But, there was Danny Kaplan.
So it might. There you go. Thank you. And I don't think he is, actually, I think he's at Kyle Busch Motorsports now. Even when he was Toyota, now he's back to Chevrolet, which kind of all worked out. But, you know, so maybe it is just a little tweak of something on Austin Dillon's side, on the crew chief side, that can be worked out, and he can become a weekly contender like Kyle Busch is. We'll have to wait and see, but so I think something does need to be done because there's definitely a disparity. And I think the fact that Tyler Reddick came in for 2 years, did the same thing, moved on, shows that as well.
Okay, we'll let that be the last word. And Andy, you're going to bring up our next hot topic.
Okay, this one isn't necessarily listed in our hot topics, but I wanted to talk about, of course, this weekend, Corey LaJoie drove the 9 car in place of Chase Elliott, and Carson Hocevar drove the 7 car in place of Corey LaJoie. Specifically, the topic would be, you know, did Corey LaJoie help or hurt his chances at securing an A-level cup ride in the future? He finished 21st, which is fairly respectable, but I think a lot of people thought he was going to set the world on fire, and that didn't exactly happen. So thoughts on, you know, his performance and what it might mean for his future?
Okay, Jay.
Yeah, I saw this as a Twitter topic, and I don't know if that's what was on SiriusXM today. I know it got talked about. I'm not sure it did either one real hard one way or the other. I know at least to start the weekend, and we talked about this going into it, of maybe overdriving it, trying to prove something in that one race audition, if you will, that he was overdriving it and overdoing it. I think he made some mistakes, not as a rookie mistake, but because he's been in a cup car. So the mistake he made to start the race was kind of unique. But I also think there's some things in it, whether it be with Hendrick Motorsports or not, because they're pretty solid and full up, that it will at least put some other eyes on him. I know there's been a lot of scuttle again about as silly season starts up. I think it was Trackhouse that he got kind of linked to if they were to start a third team in the year 2024-25, that's somebody they've talked to and would look at. But if nothing else, I think it helps him take some things from Hendrick Motorsports. As he said, it's a world of difference between the two garages, resources and everything else, that he can take back to Spire Motorsports. And they are on the rise in building that company. We've seen it with Corey LaJoie himself, and I thought Carson Hocevar actually was doing a phenomenal job for his first Cup Series start. Had a problem with the car. I think he actually finished dead last, but he was running, I believe, 16th at the time.
Okay. Yeah. Corey LaJoie had that 21st place finish in the number nine car. And we're so used to seeing that number nine car really competing in the top 10 for the most part. So I do think that while I understand where people are coming from with their comments about that, I do think that Corey LaJoie, it's the first time that he's been in really good equipment. So it's not always easy to do that. And you're at a track where there's a lot of problems that were happening for several drivers who had problems with brake rotors and accidents that were happening throughout that race because of brake rotors. So I think that he probably went into that race saying that he wanted to make sure he finished with a clean car. He probably didn't get the finish that he was hoping to get, but I agree with Jay. I think that he is still getting the acknowledgement that he was in that car this weekend, and I don't think it hurt him as bad as a lot of the fans are thinking maybe it did for the first time getting in that car. I think he did all right, and there's nothing to say that maybe Chase Elliott would have had the same kind of race at the Gateway where you've got to really take care of the equipment in order to be there at the end. So a lot of good drivers had issues when you think about some of the drivers that weren't able to finish that race because of brake rotors and whatever else. But even Brad Keselowski, who's been running pretty good, he finished off a laps running, but he ended up with a 28th place finish. So I don't think we should be so hard on Corey LaJoie for his finish in that race. I think he still should get acknowledged for jumping in that car. Now, if he gets in it a second time at a more like an intermediate track, I think then we might be able to judge him if he gets a 21st place finish. But I think at a track like the track there at WWT Raceway, I think it's a little bit of a harsh judgment. Andy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I tend to agree. You know, going into this weekend, there was a lot of excitement and hype, I think, from his fans, expecting him to go out there and win. I mean, there were questions posed to Bob Pockrass about, you know, if he wins, you know, what would his playoff eligibility be and stuff. And I thought that that was incredibly lofty to think that he would just jump in somebody else's car and go win. Like, very unfair realistic or unfair expectations. And I think Corey himself seemed to put a lot of pressure on himself to try to go out there and perform, as has already been mentioned. You know, overdriving, getting into the fence a couple different times. I don't know if he looked at the weekend as his one shot to try to go out there and get a top-tier cup ride. I don't necessarily think that. I'm sure other opportunities will present themselves down the line, but it just seemed like a ton of pressure was put on him by other people and himself, and I think that it led to mistakes and ultimately kind of a mediocre weekend. But no, it's not defining at all. It's not realistic or fair to expect somebody to jump in a cup car with a team they've never worked with before and go out there and dominate and win the race. It just doesn't happen very often. There are, you know, strange and very rare instances where we've seen this. I look back to Jamie McMurray in 2002, I believe, when he filled in for Sterling Marlin and won, I think, in maybe his first or second career start. You know, those anomalies do happen, but they're very, very rare. You know, so I think that, you know, he shouldn't necessarily be judged for that performance. Very comparable to, I think, how he probably would have run in the 7 car. And I think that, in my opinion, is the bigger story. Hosovar consistently outran Corey all weekend in the 7 car and had worked his way up to, I think, 16th when he had the brake rotor blow and ended his day. But he did a remarkable job in that car, and I think that probably turned a lot of heads as to, you know, his talent level and where he's at as far as moving up in the NASCAR world. And certainly, you know, Carson has you know, had his share of controversy over the last few years, and we've been pretty tough on him on this show. In fact, at least I have, and I think Mike has, but, you know, he's starting to put it together here in the last few weeks, in the last month or so. You know, he's calmed it down in the truck series. He's run well in his two Xfinity series starts. And I was super impressed with what he did yesterday. You know, he did a fantastic job in a team that isn't necessarily considered an A-level team. So, you know, Carson, I think, turned some heads and probably opened some doors possibly for his future. So to look at the two different scenarios, I think, you know, Corey may or may not have helped his future, but Carson Hocevar did. And I think that, you know, what he did yesterday definitely will have an impact on his 2024 plans.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Andy. I think Carson Hocevar definitely turned some heads with what he was able to do. He did break that brake rotor, but keep in mind, he wasn't the only one. There were several drivers that broke brake rotors, several good drivers that had issues with the brake rotor. So I don't think he should be judged by that at all. But he was in a subpar car that Corey LaJoie has been driving for quite some time and was able to, like you say, do better than Corey LaJoie, who is in that number 9 car. And I would say, too, you bring up a good point. There were a lot of nerves that were probably on the line for these guys as well, both Carson Hocevar and for Corey LaJoie, getting the opportunities that they both had at this race at Gateway. But again, I think it was a tough track to have your first race in a Cup car. And I think we got to go easy on judging them a little bit too harshly. But Carson Hocevar definitely came out on top, if you're going to compare the two drivers. Andy? Or Jay, did I skip you, Jay?
Yeah, come back to me.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No problem. And I know it's a little different when you're going to talk about Josh Berry because he hadn't been in the Cup versus Corey LaJoie has, even if it isn't in comparable equipment. But it took Josh Berry a couple of races to get accustomed, you know. I know, like I said, it's still within the Cup series that Corey LaJoie moved over, but there are so many things that are going to be different within an organization. The people are different, for one, so the communication is different. So just like with when we go to a new track or anything else, you can't judge it really off of one race. Again, feel like he was solid. Had they not had a couple of hiccups, maybe a 15th, possibly 10th place, which is for a sub driver coming into that car, I think is reasonable. They had the little hiccups and he ended up with the 21st place finish. But to the other side of that, I'm with both of y'all. And I've kind of been there all along versus bagging on Carson Hocevar. I have really been impressed with his Xfinity starts and then now this Cup Series start, and as well as the truck race. And I know, Andy, you weren't on the other night. When we talked about the truck race from Charlotte, I felt like he could have done things like he's done in the past and drove it in and wrecked himself and some others. I felt like he checked out several times and took let some situations go and took a third, fourth place finish. I think it was within the top five versus going all out for that win, as Chastain has been known to do, and not getting anything to show for it. So I think he has shown some great maturity and improvement on that side of it. So I really look forward to what his future holds. And I think Corey LaJoie, like I said, I don't think it hurt him any. But Sharon said it. I don't think it's as bad or as negative as what some of the fans are saying. Again, Mike and I have talked about it. You know, yeah, we can jump in Kyle Larson's car. That doesn't mean we're going to perform like Kyle Larson does or anybody, you know, that just because it's not just the car. You got to have all that right combination.
Okay, Andy, you get the final word here.
Yeah, not too much follow-up on this, really. You know, I think that it was a unique experience to see what each driver would do in those respective cars this weekend. And I think it'll be interesting to see if any doors open from this moving forward or not.
I just want to say kudos to Chase Briscoe and his organization, though, too. He was still running at the end of that race, even though he was laps down. I think it was, 11 laps down. I give him kudos for getting back out there and trying to do everything he could in that race.
I wish it was 11 laps down. It was 49
laps down.
Yeah, I was
going to say,
yeah, that was
49,
yeah,
I think, is what it was.
That was a painful day. That was a very painful week and very painful day, Cher, and that's all I can say. But, you know, as fans, we have to go through this every now and then. I know you've probably
mm-hmm.
been down this road before, too, and it'll get better. It has to.
Yeah, it will. It will. But I still think it takes a lot of perseverance to get out there on the track and be that many laps down and still charging forward. And at one point they said he got a lap back. So, you know, that's not easy to do when you're that far down. So I just wanted to mention that to you.
Yeah, the team actually, just real quick, they had pretty good spirits, I felt like. Mike Bugaravich is actually the crew chief subbing for John Klausmeier, and he was Boyer's crew chief for 3 years on the 14. So I'm very familiar with him as a crew chief, and he does a really good job. And I thought came in and did a really good job and, you know, maybe in all honesty was kind of a refreshing change from the way things have been. So maybe this is that little spark that gets them headed the right direction, you know, and that's all we can hope for.
Yeah, absolutely. Jay, did you have any other topics you want to make sure we mention here?
Well, I think we got, a little over 10 minutes. We can take a look at the one you posted, the Save the Speedway. Says on here, explanation, as they look at what track to target next to try and revitalize if they were to choose to do so.
Okay. Andy, I did see another post in regard to that, and they were asking what track would you pick, but in this particular point, they gave a very detailed explanation of the tracks they were looking at. And unfortunately, Rockingham was not one of those tracks. And they kind of explained why. And also, they kind of counted Nazareth Speedway out of the equation as well and gave a reason why. And in another post, they were asking the fans, what track would you like for us to look at beyond North Wilkesboro? So your thoughts?
To be honest, I haven't given this a ton of thought, but it would be cool to see Rockingham come back. I always enjoyed that track when it was on the schedule, you know, but whether it happens or not, it's really tough to say. Certainly was excited to see North Wilkesboro's revitalization this year. Not really sure. I think any of us thought we'd ever see that happen. Nazareth, I'm not sure that's even feasible anymore. I saw a picture of it pretty recently, and it's amazing how poor it looks. You know, and that wasn't on the schedule that long ago. You know, about 18 to 20 years ago, it was still on the Busch Series schedule. So, but unfortunately, things can deteriorate a lot in that amount of time. So I'm not sure you'd ever see that again. I think there's two realistic options, and they probably one of them is going to be really popular with you, Sharon. The other one probably not so much. But Chicagoland and Kentucky, because neither one of them are that far out of date. You know, we raced on both those, or I should say NASCAR raced on those tracks fairly recently. And, you know, I would rather see Chicago come back over Kentucky because they've put on pretty good shows there. I know you'd agree with that one, Sharon. So I think if anything came back, maybe that one. But just from a feasibility standpoint, I think Kentucky or Chicagoland pretty much ready to go, I would think. You know, they're not too far gone as far as, you know, being let go. But some of these other ones, I think Rockingham probably is in good shape. I think they repaved it recently. But, yeah, Nazareth and some of these other ones are in pretty bad disrepair, and I'm not sure you'll ever see him come back. But Who knows? I mean, it'll be interesting to see if anything comes back. I for one, wouldn't mind seeing, you know, tracks rotate in and off the schedule maybe here and there, you know, just to try to keep the schedule fresh. Maybe we'll see something like that in the future.
Okay. Well, they're in their explanation, they indicate that Rockingham, Darlington, and Wilkesboro, the two tracks closed because of the oversaturation of the area. And so now that they have Darlington and North Wilkesboro running, they want to be careful not to make the same mistakes too soon. And they want to make sure that Wilkesboro is established or North Wilkesboro is established before they think about bringing Rockingham into that equation again. So that seems like a smart move for them. And then for Nazareth Speedway, the reason that they're really not looking at Nazareth Speedway kind of surprised me. I did not realize this. NASCAR, when they sold the track, it was sold with a very specific provision in the sale with a deed restriction that prevents the track from ever being used for racing again. So unless there's some lawyer with a ton of capital that wants to fight NASCAR to have it removed, the deed restriction remains and the track won't be used for racing again. So that just closes the door on Nazareth Speedway with no hope of ever bringing it back. Again, I like that they gave an explanation for why they're not looking at Rockingham right now. They say maybe after they get North Wilkesboro clearly established, maybe they'll look at Rockingham again, but right now it's not on their list. But I do agree with you with regard to Chicagoland Speedway. I would love to see them bring that track back, and we'll see what happens after the Chicago Street Race if there is a more conversation about doing that. But I do kind of feel like what they've done is, in addition to bringing the street race to Chicagoland Speedway, they've brought the Cup Series to WWT Raceway, and I think that's become our Illinois track now. So I have less hope of them bringing Chicagoland Speedway back because of that. But I hope that they do consider it, because we did see some great racing there, and I know Jay agrees with me on that. The other track that I would like to see them also consider, though, is Iowa Speedway. I think that's a great little track out there, and I think it's so accessible from I-80 that it just baffles me that more people were not attending that race. I wish the fans would come to me and tell me why they're not attending the race at Iowa Speedway, because it's so accessible and so accommodating to the fans and racers and everything else. So it's a head-scratcher to me as to why there weren't more people going to Iowa Speedway. And I'm sure that that plays into why they kind of backed off of that track. I will tell you, and Jay will confirm this, there were conversations of expanding that track and making it kind of more of a sports facility within the area there that I think would be another big attraction for Iowa Speedway. But with NASCAR kind of backing down on the number of races they're doing there, I think there's still an ARCA race out there, and I think IndyCar still races out there. But I think if they were able to do like they did at Nashville, if they were able to contribute to revitalizing that into a more of a sports complex, if you will, I think it could pay off some big dividends there. So that's one I would put on the list. Jay, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think between the two of you, you kind of covered them all, but we'll start with Rockingham. I know that's a popular one, and that is one that would be a revitalization, as mentioned. Second off, you talk about the area saturation. I think what Andy hit on there, and is something I think they could maybe look at, is then rotating between some of these that every third year, you know, or 2 to 3 years, they go to this track versus that one would help. But that one is still open and running. What did it say under there? The Smart Modifieds. Yeah, the Smart Modifieds. Rockingham is open to holding events to include a Smart Modifieds race later this year.
Right.
Hitting on Nazareth. This is one that kind of a personal thing here, Columbus Speedway right next to the house. Oddly enough, I just talked to a couple of weeks ago. I went tried to go direct to the source. I've always heard that if they don't host one race a year there per year, that it will be shut down and cannot be used to race again. And I talked to the grandson of the guy that originally ran it and when it was thriving back in the day, and he said he didn't even know if that was true. It's become folklore. Everybody believes it, but they don't know if it's true. But they always make sure they get one race per year in just in case, because that could happen, I guess. In this case, it was actually in the contract for Nazareth. So, yeah, you got to scratch that one. Then you move into Sharon hit on Chicagoland. Should have never went away. It's not a full revitalization because the track is still there. But I also look at new opportunities then, and Iowa has never gotten its Cup Series opportunity. Great facility, some great racing. I don't know if it's 100%. I know that there isn't a whole lot in the immediate area of the track as far as other big city attractions. I know that's one of the things NASCAR looked at, that you don't have that. But that track did a phenomenal job of, and Sharon, I'm trying to remember when I did the interview with David Hoots of what they brought within those 2 weeks of stuff around the track, different concerts. I know he was working with several tracks, both asphalt and dirt, to kind of partner together. But they did put together stuff at the track or within that community to provide that experience, so it wasn't just the race only. Unfortunately, I'm with you. I don't understand why it was not successful. But that also goes back to no matter what track it be, North Wilkesboro, Rockingham, Iowa, Chicagoland. And I don't know that Chicagoland necessarily had that issue, but if fans want the racetrack there, you got to come out and support it.
Yes, indeed. That is so true. Andy, your follow-up?
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, a lot of support for North Wilkesboro to come back. You know, a lot of talk about it. The fans showed up. And, you know, I know that there was, you know, years and years, there was a lot of people advocating, you know, for Gateway to come back and, or, you know, make its way to the Cup Series. Of course, it had been on the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series schedules for quite some time. Went away for a bit, but came back, and you can see how great the support has been there as well the last couple of years. So, yeah, you know, if a track does make its way from, you know, the dead back to life, you know, you got to go support it. So that would be the key for sure.
Okay, and I'm going to put a shout-out here to one of our Fan Racing crew people, crew members, and that's Brian Eberle. He's been going out to Road America, and they have a walking course or an exercise course, I guess you might want to call it, at Road America, that when the track's not being used for racing, fans can go out there and walk the track as part of their exercise program. And he's been doing that. But that's another track that I think NASCAR should consider making a return to as well. I thought they put on some great racing at Road America. And I just wanted to add that track to the list. But I think without repeating what everybody's already said, I'm going to kind of end it there and let Jay have the final word here. Jay?
Well, my final word is, Sharon, you need to become a psychic, because I just thought about that. I saw where Brian had tweeted that earlier that he was at Road America and having been to that track. Awesome facility. I was excited. I don't know what NASCAR's thought process was. They came there for, 2 years? I think it was a huge success, but they pulled it to try this Chicago street course. Understand, try new things, but at what expense? And that Road America was another one, kind of like Chicagoland. I'm just like, how do you take something away that was that successful? But I'll go with the new one then, with the Xfinity Series anyway, and road course racing. I always liked Pikes Peak out in Colorado.
There you go. Okay, well, we are at the top of the hour, and that means it's time for our round table or our triangle once again for our handles and what we're doing next. Okay, so Andy, we'll start with you.
CB14 fan on Twitter, and good to be back after missing the show on Thursday, and I'm pretty sure I'll be back Thursday, so looking forward to that. And once again, nice to be on tonight.
Okay. And Andy, I want to give you a programming note real quick because it might make a difference. We are going to do a podcast on Thursday, and it will be during that time frame that we'll be on air for Hot Topics at about 1 o'clock Eastern time. So I hope that doesn't change the perspective for you being on with us again on Thursday.
No, not at all. I think it'll work. I'm not seeing any reason why it won't work. So at this time,
okay,
we'll plan
good.
On it.
Okay, that's good news. Jay?
Well, Sharon, I'm going to ask you what I'm going to say because you did it again. I was going to ask if you had talked to Andy about the change for Thursday, but you hit on it. So you can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram, and had a great weekend with the Comp Cam Super Late Models at Jackson. This week I get to be a fan, and I'll put a picture up in the group chat, but I don't get to be a fan very often, so this weekend I think I'm going to be here at Columbus Speedway supporting that track and just watching as a fan.
Okay, so that's pretty cool. And we've got some other dates coming up, Andy. I'll put you on put it on our team's page with what some of those opportunities might be coming up. But I'm waiting for Jay to get back to me, too. But I might talk to you just as a backup in case Jay can't do it. But anyway, I know that's cryptic right now. It'll make more sense when I send you the message. Earlier tonight, we did have Dylan Zampa on the show. He gave us a great interview, and we got to know him just a little bit more. So if you get a chance, he drives the number 29 car in the Spears SRL Southwest Touring Series. He just won a race out there, and he's got Kern County Raceway coming up on the schedule. If you get a chance to go back and listen to it, it was during our second half hour of the show here tonight. I'm sure we'll have him back on as well. And then also for Thursday's show, one of the reasons we're doing the podcast is the availability of our guest, Landon Lewis, after having three straight second-place finishes in the ARCA West Series, finally came up with that victory out at Portland International Raceway this week. So we're going to have him on the show this Thursday, and he'll be able to review the race win at Portland, but he'll be racing at Sonoma Raceway, so he'll be able to help us preview that race coming up at Sonoma as well and give us his thoughts about going into that race. I'm sure he has some momentum on his side after winning at Portland, but looking forward to talking to Landon Lewis on our Thursday show. So a big shout out to our listeners for tuning in. I know we've had a really weird schedule this season so far, but we really appreciate everybody taking the time to tune in, whether it's on the live broadcast or the podcast. And also to our Fan for Racing crew, Sal Segala, who is on the show here tonight for the early part, and then Jay Huseman and Andy Lasky here for our Hot Topic sound-off discussion. Always appreciate you guys, and we'll look forward to doing it again on Thursday. With that, I think we're ready to call it a night, guys.
All right. Have a nice night.
Good night. We'll talk to you Thursday.
Good night, everybody. Take care.